Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to Casa Bozell as we divide the staff into daytime and nighttime shifts for the big pseudo State of the Union speech. Well, we do have daytime and nighttime shifts, but Mr. Whitlock shifts to nighttime. We have a bigger crew at night for these events. Yeah, Mrs. Graham said to me, "Is this the speech where they clap every 17 seconds?" Yeah, that's the one. This is the one where the president says something everybody agrees with, like, "I believe that dogs are good," and then everybody claps. Although Biden might want to skip the dog talk. Should have named his dog McGruff because he takes a bite out of crime. I wanted to say thanks to the people at Fox News at Night for having me on to discuss the dramatic bias by omission about John Kerry. This breaking story where Kerry's accused of telling Iranian former minister Javid Zarif about how Israel had been dropping bombs on the Iranian forces in Syria. Why would the former Secretary of State tell a foreign minister in Iran that's supposed to sort of be our adversary? They sort of killed a bunch of our soldiers in Iraq. And he's ratting out the Israelis, our ally? Now, in the last administration, the networks loaded up so-called bombshell after bombshell about how Trump had allegedly sold out Americans or our allies to the Russians. But there are just no bombshells to embarrass the Democrats. Only occasionally they'll admit a little Republicans pounced story. Now, the revelations on Kerry, it depends on when it was that supposedly Kerry said this to Zarif. I mean, Zarif said in this interview with an Iranian journalist that Kerry told him this. Kerry denies he ever did such a thing. So you could say, all right, well, we're not going to trust Javid Zarif as a reliable source. But guess what? Lester Holt had a much more friendly interview with Javad Zarif than he did with Donald Trump. I mean, and this has happened over the years with Iranian foreign secretaries, Iranian quote-unquote presidents. They get sappy, really sappy interviews with the Scott Pelley's and the Lester Holt's. And that's where you wonder, yeah, it makes you think the news media thinks that anybody who's an enemy of the Republicans is kind of all right with them. So Donald Trump gets the third degree and the foreign minister of Iran gets, how you doing? So they're going to say, well, this is not a fully confirmed story. Kerry denies it. We're not going to trust this foreigner. But how many times did they lead newscasts under Trump when they said stuff like, NBC has not independently confirmed this, but we're going to lead the show with it anyway? I mean, look no further than the recently collapsed story about the Russians putting bounties on our soldiers in Afghanistan. And then how they claimed Trump did nothing about this heinous pseudo-story. Now they're saying, well, gee, the intelligence on that was junk. But in the heat of the 2020 campaign, you know, this was a hot scandal. This was something to make Donald Trump look bad. And then now that the desired effect happened and Biden is president, well, we'll kind of admit that was junk. Well, but at the time, it was a bombshell. Now it's a nothing. On this one, Nick Fondacaro reported ABC and CBS and NBC and even the Spanish language networks all skipped it on their evening news. I found PBS NewsHour offered one paragraph in its news wrap to Zarif's leaked remarks. You know, it was 20 or 30 seconds. And they didn't even make any reference to Kerry or Israel. NPR didn't seem to have time on All Things Considered in the evening or morning edition in the morning. Now, their top-of-the-hour newscasts aren't on the website, so you can't see whether they did little anchor briefs like PBS. But they did have time for a piece on how poetry has gotten us through the pandemic. They had two segments, one in the morning and one in the evening, on the radical black liberation group MOVE in Philadelphia and how the city cops dropped 2 1-pound bombs from a helicopter in 1985, which set up a deadly fire. It's 1985. You know, maybe there's some new developments. MOVE still exists, but this is not exactly breaking news, and it's basically a local story. This is one of the ways national news shows you how biased it is, because they'll dismiss Kermit Gosnell snipping the necks of babies because that's a local story. But every shooting where they can say the police unjustly shot a black person, that's a national story. When the Kerry story appeared in the New York Times, it wasn't really a story. It was a story on Zarif and this leaked interview. But the Kerry piece of it was in one paragraph, and it was paragraph number 22 in a story that was published on page A8. That's a little obscure. This made me think like a conspiracy theorist about anonymous sourcing, because that's all we can do, right? Imagine that if John Kerry is a consistent leaker to the New York Times, when he's in office and when he's not, he's going to get the benefit of the doubt when something like this breaks. He gets graph 22 because he's been a helpful source, and we have known nothing about it because it's anonymous. It's a senior government official, a former government official, or just a, you know, well-placed smart person. Heck, how can we be sure the Times hasn't benefited from leaks from an anonymous source that turned out to be the Iranian foreign minister? We don't know that that did not happen because they hide behind a wall. The people who tout transparency can't tell you who they're actually talking to. And it's one thing if it's something important, but these newspapers use anonymous sources for... A government official said Donald Trump threw a cheeseburger across the room at the television. The column that I did is about the Stacey Abrams op-ed in the USA Today, the shape-shifting op-ed in USA Today. She wrote one on March 31st. I thought the opening paragraph really set the stage. She says, "Boycotts work. The focused power of no, trained on corporate actors used to being told yes, can yield transformative results. As a black person, a southerner, an American, I respect and defend the right to boycott, and the advancement of civil rights has relied heavily on economic boycotts." Now, doesn't that sound like a pro-boycott piece? That's certainly the way it's starting. But, you know, what happened was then a couple days later, Major League Baseball announced it was yanking the All-Star game from Atlanta. So suddenly, Stacey Abrams didn't want to be so pro-boycott. Well, deep in this article, while she said she didn't think a boycott was necessary yet, she also said she couldn't argue with anybody or any individual who would want a boycott. Then the article was quote-unquote updated. The line about how she couldn't argue with a boycott was removed. Then she added a substantial rewrite about how Major League Baseball's boycott could cost our state nearly $100 million in lost revenue, and then she blamed the Republicans for it. But USA Today apparently altered this article on behalf of Abrams on April 6th, and it took them more than another 2 weeks, April 22, for them to actually acknowledge they had altered the piece. That is what we call stealth editing. And I think it's more important when you're stealth editing a politician who wants their piece stealth edited for their political career. And the problem with that is then Twitter gets involved, tries to say that according to journalists and fact checkers, Stacey Abrams encouraged Americans to invest in Georgia-based businesses. That's, you know, I mean, the lingo here. And then they link to tweets by PolitiFact and CNN's Daniel Dale. And both of those outlets came rushing to Stacey Abrams' defense. And it's this is one of those things where you just say, are these fact checkers supposed to be used to check facts? Or it, as in this case, as in many cases, it seems like they're there to be energetic spin controllers for the Democrats, to come by and try to fix things for their public relations so things look better. We will be back to discuss several things with Nicholas Night Train Fondacaro after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
We are back with Nick Fondacaro, the Nightman. Nick had a bias-busting coup in the last week in a hot story of a police shooting in Columbus where Micaiah Bryant was shot right before she stabbed another black teenager. And NBC anchor Lester Holt presented a story where something really important was left out. The other networks had it. What did he do, Nick?
Well, when they played the 911 call that brought the officer there in the first place, they used a clip that did not include the how Bryant was, or somebody at the scene was trying to stab other people. They cut out the part where there was a weapon involved and there was a threat to bodily harm and life. And then when it came to showing the video of the attack, they basically kept it at full speed and sort of didn't even show like at really much of the lunge or show any sort of example of the knife in her hand, where ABC and CBS were both sort of froze frame, zoomed in, and highlighted the knife in the hand in some form of fashion. And then NBC's version of highlighting the knife, they were just like, body cam shows the knife, and it's like the knife on the ground, not in her hand.
Yeah.
Like after she had been shot. And then keeping with your theme of the stealth edits,
yeah.
After Newsbusters reported it and it exploded all over the place, they swooped in and just pushed, like they just added those little, those corrections. They never actually addressed what they were, and the controversy, but they just sort of put those in without any vocal.
Yeah, they did. They did a story the next night. My guess was we had it on in the house, and I said they're not going to touch this. I told you before the show came on, they're not going to touch this now, and they did the opposite because they want to do as many stories on police violence as possible. So they did it again, but this time they did it the way the other networks did, where they actually included this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's in, you know, this is what we're hoping to do at Newsbusters, is to call out this really shoddy journalism to not give the full context, right? Aren't the fact checkers always telling us things are missing context? I mean, that's absolutely what Lester and NBC did here.
Oh, it's absolutely. And then on the top that off is, it would have been fine if they would have just left it at that and just like, okay, this is how they're going to correct it. They're going to just not mention it. But then in the same report, they sort of touted LeBron James for putting out his tweet targeting the officer going, you're next.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, which yeah, it's always funny because the networks will try to tell us that they're about uniting, Biden's about uniting. They're not interested in uniting, and I think that all of their coverage of police violence has that undercurrent of dividing the country. And the other night, I said to my wife, that the NBC Nightly News looked like the BLM Nightly News. I mean, it was just one police violence incident after another, and all of the victims were black. I mean, and so it's like people get the impression that police never shoot anybody who's not black because that's all that they are shown.
Mm-hmm. And we know differently that from the statistics that more white people are shot by police than black people are, though disproportionately based on population.
Right.
But at the same time, that these cases do exist. The one case that sticks out in my mind, or in particular, there was one, I forget what the city was, there was police, I believe it was like a hotel or something, and they asked like this guy to leave the hotel room, and he was like crawling around. They had him crawl on the floor to the police, and they ended up shooting him. Like, so he's crawling like a dog, and they shoot him while he's on the ground, crawling to them, following their orders. So,
well, this is where, and this is sort of the thing, is that you could certainly find cases where you could question the police conduct in a, in a shooting of a white American. And that's, this is where you start to say, is this news or is this advertising? Is this narrative? Is this messaging? And yeah, I think the case of Micaiah Bryant, we just saw all that kind of lunacy on Twitter saying, you know, why are the cops getting in the middle of our knife fights?
Yeah, and especially at that point where you're getting certain anchors like Joy Reid saying, oh, look, we did this. We grew up with this. This is fine. It's nothing. It's like, it's a knife fight.
Yeah. Well, she had, it was something, what were they fought with less impressive knives, I think
she was. Or something like that, like, which is not really the argument you would think you'd want to make.
Well, that's where that's where you're left. We were talking about the new census has come out, and the notion here of certain states were losing seats in the House, certain seats were gained, and you could just sense the news media has such trouble separating its own anxiety from the Democrats' anxiety. It's basically the same thing. So you noticed that there was a segment on the Chris Cuomo show, two of them, on redistricting.
Yeah. So before, so last night he had this little go at redistricting where he was showing some districts that were gerrymandered and in Democratic states. And you, so at first it started off all right, but then it took a hard turn toward against Republicans and accusing Republicans like Jim Jordan, Marjorie Taylor Greene, of being heading gerrymandered districts. And if you look at Marjorie Taylor Greene's district, it is, you could tell that it's not, it's just basically the northwestern corner of Georgia. Like, you can't claim that that's,
yeah, that was the weirdest thing, because he shows them on screen. He starts with like Maryland 2, and Maryland 2, just Google Maryland congressional district map. It's not just Maryland 2, it's Maryland 3 and Maryland 4. It's a mess.
One of them looks like a boat with a sail.
I mean, they're ludicrous, to be frank. And there are lots of districts like that that look ludicrous. And his whole point was, you know, well, Jim Jordan's district is 90% white instead of 80%. The whole state is 80% white. Well, yeah, again, that includes Cleveland and Cincinnati and Columbus. So Jim Jordan's district looks, it's not completely contiguous, but it looks way more reasonable than a gerrymandered state. And then, as you suggest, the Marjorie Taylor Greene district may be a new district, but it looks like a comma or something, or an upside down comma. It doesn't look like some sort of animal
Or a snake in some cases in some of these districts.
But the weirdest thing to me is this whole notion that they have that somehow all the redistricting was done to oppress the black voters, and it's like, no, wait a minute. Or then he kind of suggested it was bipartisan, so none of them had to listen to you. But it's sort of like they made a very explicit effort to create majority-minority districts so that there could be a sizable congressional black caucus. And that's some of those districts that look ludicrous. That's exactly what happened. They would make districts to make sure you had a majority-minority district. So I don't understand how that somehow is a racist conspiracy.
Yeah, and later in the second segment, he brought on Eric Holder, former Attorney General Eric Holder, and Holder was talking about how, like, if Republicans were going to gerrymander the districts and make a racist district where, like, they were trying to do something like that, they would challenge it in court. So are they now going to, like, try to target the majority-minority districts? And then he was also pushing for them to pass H.R. 1, which he said would codify what a politically gerrymandered district is, which is, it sounds a lot like I know it when I see it sort of
thing. Yeah, it's funny because one of the things they touted in H.R. 1 was that they would have independent commissions instead of politicians. And Holder, in his interview on CNN, explicitly says, if we get independent commissions, we'll be all right. But what he's basically hinting at there is independent commissions are going to help the Democrats. And then, well, then are they independent?
Yeah, he even claims, I'm not trying to gerrymander for the Democrats. And he's like, and it's like, dude, you're Eric Holder.
Well, this is always the mysterious thing about Eric Holder, is Eric Holder was very much a left-wing activist. He did everything Obama wanted him to. He said at one point he was Obama's wingman. And then the news media comes in and goes, oh, when the Democrats in power, suddenly the attorney general's independent. Bob Barr was Trump's disgusting lawyer, but Eric Holder, boy, that's when nonpartisanship and independence reigned. You know, Loretta Lynch doing justice with Clinton at the airport. Oh, no, she's very independent. And now Merrick Garland, oh, so independent. And yet, they expect this Justice Department to do very progressive things. They nominated this Vanita Gupta and Kristen Clark, who are both radical minorities. You know, obviously, the attorney general is a white male former federal judge, best known as an FX punchline. What about Merrick Garland? You know, when Hillary lost. But, you know, obviously, the Justice Department under Democrats is at least as partisan and ideological as it is under Republicans. This is one of those myths the news media are giving us. Obviously, as you suggest, I mean, Holder, this has been a project of his, redistricting.
Oh, yeah. In the clip itself, he talks about how him and others have been working on this since 2016. So this is something that they've been keeping an eye on for a very long time and been looking forward to and have been mobilizing for.
Well, and it's understandable because this is part of the political process. This is at a time right now where there's a 50-50 Senate and a 6-seat difference in the House. That's the way it is. I mean, and then they had all this lame stuff. Cuomo, I guess, had this lame stuff about how the Senate, you know, the Republican states represent so many less people than the Democratic states. It's like, hey, dummy, that's the way the Constitution was put together, that the small states and the big states each got 2 senators.
It's a way to balance out the states in totality amongst themselves, that everybody gets balanced that way. And then you have the House, which is supposed to be is everything is proportion based on population. So you have sort of like the best of both worlds of the numerically equal in the Senate and then proportionally equal in the House.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens in each state. And, you know, I think Eric Holder's very upset about what happened in 2011. And the joke would be on some level, that's the Obama administration's fault. They were so radical in 2009 and 2010 that the Republicans made gains in the state legislatures. They still think that was some sort of racist problem. They can be upset again that the state legislatures aren't exactly lining up for them in 2021. But even if they redistrict, it's like we can all say, hey, Montana gets 2 districts now. Those will probably be 2 Republican districts. Well, they have Senator John Tester. So, I mean, I think that sometimes you overestimate the effects of redistricting. And you know, in a state, let's imagine in a state like Illinois, where the state legislator is going to go, hey, let's just get rid of that Adam Kinzinger district and give his stuff to other people.
Exactly. And then the night before last, 2 nights ago, Cuomo was talking about this again. So this has been a multi-night sort of fixation for him, and they were talking about it, and they were saying like, oh, if these commissions and Republican line drawers were doing it correctly, the Republicans wouldn't necessarily pick up seats. So it's like, okay, so the only way that it's considered correct is if Republicans either stay the same or lose.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is CNN, this is DNC TV. I mean, and when you bring on Eric Holder to describe everything they're doing on behalf of the Democrats, it's standard issue, you know, Andrew Cuomo's brother TV.
Yeah, so you had Cuomo going around and that night and saying stuff like Republicans have more seats or represented more in the U.S. government than they actually represent in the population. So he's trying to apply like a UK style proportional representation system, saying like, oh, their party only has this much support, so they should have a very small fraction of Democratic positions in government.
So then finally, we have the pseudo State of the Union. This is one of those well, we call them war room nights, where you guys are up filing away stories. I mean, more than usual. I mean, you guys will probably have 10 or 12 of them or something overnight about what happened and all the crazy reaction. I mean, I imagine that there's going to be a lot of gush, but Jeff Dickens has a piece up today on Newsbusters about how they dealt with Donald Trump and his State of the Unions. You know, they weren't favorable towards those. I brought a couple. Since Nick is the focuses in on CNN quite a bit, I have a couple of the CNN quotes. March 1, 2017, Don Lemon. This was a speech written by a college student for someone else trying to use big words to impress that the person who was reciting it did not know the meaning of the words. That's how it sounded. Like Donald Trump wasn't a college student? I mean, Donald Trump went to grad school. He went to the Wharton School of Business, but he's trying to... Just the whole idea of Don Lemon saying somebody else is a dummy.
Yeah, the guy who tried to dunk on Trump by taking the cognitive exam that Trump was bragging that he had aced, and then him and Cuomo looking at it and then like mislabeling a camel, or it was a hippo. They claimed one of them said it was a rhino or an elephant. They like went back and forth. It was really funny.
Yeah, it's like, again, beware when you try to say somebody else is a dummy. Van Jones, CNN analyst, post State of the Union coverage 2019. I saw this as a psychotically incoherent speech with cookies and dog poop.
I wrote that one. It was, you can always count on Van Jones on nights like that to just give you like the perfect sort of like, this is the lunacy that they've sort of driven themselves into on this.
And he was upset because he's like, he said these warm things about humanitarianism and caring about children. And at the same time, he's demonizing people who are immigrants in a way that was appalling. And obviously this is Van back in his white lash mode. But it's this notion that somehow there aren't any immigrants who might be criminals. Obviously, Trump was going to focus on this to some degree. He's going to focus on MS-13 or something of that nature. And they always got angry at that. Like, there is no such thing as a criminal immigrant. Now, last year, Jim Acosta was kvetching about Trump giving the Medal of Freedom to Rush Limbaugh because apparently Rush Limbaugh hated African Americans. So, I mean, this is what we're used to. And I imagine CNN tonight, it's going to be A's and A pluses.
I'm pretty sure that they're not going to do what they did. I think it was like his second address where they suggested that Melania was wearing a white dress as a silent protest against her husband because female Democratic lawmakers wore white to protest Trump the year before.
Yeah, it is definitely weird when they start psychoanalyzing. And when you can also tell the way they do this right is they're always like, the Trump marriage was messed up. They always somehow definitively knew how messed up the Trump marriage was. And then they're always touting, you know, Joe and Jill. Oh, the love story. And that's you know, and if they have a great marriage, that's fine. I didn't have a problem with Barack and Michelle Obama having a lovely marriage or whatever, but also George and Laura Bush had a lovely marriage. George and Barbara Bush had a lovely marriage. It's not that amazing a thing. It just, they decide who they like and who they hate and then emphasize the positive qualities of the ones they like.
And they try to nitpick it because, like, everybody sort of touted the...
Nitpick?
Yes, exactly.
That's what we'll call your articles, nitpicking.
There we go. because you would have them, like, sort of tout Hillary with the stand by your man, with everything with Bill, but then they were always pushing for Melania to ditch him and stuff like that because they wanted the story of president divorced, president
again.
Separated. Yeah, exactly. Like, first president divorced in office, I guess. I don't know if any president's ever been divorced while in office, but...
But obviously the first divorced president was Reagan because he had divorced Jane, or Jane Wyman divorced him because he got too political. And then he married Nancy. So he was, the first president who was elected as a divorced president. Mm-hmm. Well, that was always the weirdness. That was the worst. If you want to talk about news media... And the way that they don't care about the truth. You know, they would go on and they would say, oh, Bill and Hillary hold hands over warm dip, and they love each other so much. And it's just like, come on! We understood she was going to stand by him because she wanted to run for president someday, which she did twice and lost both times, in part because people looked at her and said, yeah, you're kind of a cold person because you knew he was cheating all over on you, and you were okay with that because you wanted to be president.
Exactly.
And then you're like, okay, here goes Tim on his Bill and Hillary Clinton rant again. Final thought. Who are the Jets taking? Are they taking Zach Wilson?
Probably.
And how about who do you want? They got two first-round picks. Do you have any preference?
Honestly, I haven't really been following the college stuff. So
it's a tough year because, I mean, how much college football was there?
Yeah, really, right? And like, how much tape do you have? That'll probably be something like a COVID thing that sort of ripples through the NFL for a year or two, just to see how things sort of shake up from the college level.
Yeah, all I know as a Packers fan is, we're doing well enough that by the time they get around to the Packers pick, I'll be asleep. Or maybe I won't, but I'll wish I was. So, come back around, follow us when we follow this big Biden speech and all the gush we're probably going to get. Come over to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.